All right. The Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Nebraska is now open for the transaction of business. Draw nigh, all ye having business with this Honorable Court, and ye shall be heard. God save the State of Nebraska and this Honorable Court.
Thank you. You may be seated. Good morning to everyone. We will begin with introductions by the court. I am Mike Havikin, the Chief Justice, and now by order of seniority as to service on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves.
Good morning. I'm Lindsay Miller-Lerman.
William Castle. Good morning.
I'm Stephanie Stacy. Good morning.
Good morning. I am Jeff Funk.
Jonathan Papik. Good morning.
And John Friedenberg.
Thank you, members of the court, and our bailiff this morning is Allie Stewart. Allie, thank you for being here. Counsel, the first case of the day is In Re Interest of Daniel S. Mr. Marks, good morning to you, and Mr. Erickson, good morning to you. Do either of you have any questions before we begin?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, Mr. Marks, you may proceed.
Good morning, Chief Justice, Justices.
Allie.
I'm here today on behalf of my client, Daniel S., appealing a detention order entered by a separate juvenile court judge in Sarpy County, Nebraska. The appeal involves the detention statutes.
Counsel, before you get too far into your argument, can you direct us to any precedent for the principle that a detention order in a juvenile delinquency case is a final appealable order?
No, I believe this would be the first time that the court might be addressing this. I can tell you why I think it is an appealable order. To be a final order, it has to be a special proceeding where a substantial right exists, and that substantial right is affected. So those three things.
Substantially affected, yeah.
So we know juvenile court proceedings are special proceedings. That's a given. So I think it comes down to whether or not there's a substantial right and whether that substantial right is affected. I think the substantial right involved, there's a couple substantial rights that I would argue. One is the liberty interest of a youth from being detained or having his or her restriction limited. If this isn't a final order, then there's not going to be any appellate oversight to determine the propriety of the decision by the judge as to whether those restrictions should be limited.
What does the record tell us about the restrictions that were imposed on this juvenile?
The record is silent, but
then how can we determine whether the restrictions, if any, had a substantial impact?
Well, I don't think just because it's not in the record that you can't use common sense. I think you can still fall back on your knowledge and experience as it involves electronic monitoring. I don't think I'm probably the first attorney here to talk about that particular
How do we know that this involves electronic monitoring? All I know is that he was placed on something called the CARE program, and my common sense doesn't help a lot with knowing what that is.
Well,
is there more from the record we know?
Well, I think that there was some discussion as to I don't recall the mention of electronic monitoring right off the top of my head, but that is one of the reasons. It's an alternative to detention, and I think if you look at the definition of an alternative to detention in the statute, it talks about electronic monitoring, and an alternative to detention was utilized in this situation.
So let's assume that there was electronic monitoring. Why would that be a substantial right that the juvenile was put on? Apparently the juvenile was not detained.
No, there was a detention intake, and at the detention intake, the youth was sent home on an electronic monitor.
So sent home on an electronic monitor, why would that be affect a substantial right?
Because even with electronic monitoring, a youth's restriction, freedom is restricted. Again, based on knowledge and prior experience, an electronic monitor contains a GPS unit. You can track that youth's movements every second of every minute of every hour of every day.
Is that a privacy issue or liberty issue?
It can be.
I mean, if there's no restriction about where you can go on this electronic monitoring, then it wouldn't be a liberty issue, would it?
There is a restriction.
Okay, and is that in the...
It's not in the record.
Is that part of the care program?
It's part of the care program.
Like a curfew, or...?
There's a curfew, and on level one, you can't go anywhere without a parent. Level two, you're allowed a four-hour pass each week. Each level is 2 weeks, so... There's a restriction as to, and there are other restrictions. There's UAs, and there are other restrictions that come into play.
But none of that's in our record.
None of that is in our record, Your Honor. Okay.
Whose responsibility is it to get that in our record?
Well, that would be on the legal parties. I would take responsibility for that. I know that there's an overall sense that electronic monitoring, you're not being detained. You're not in a detention facility. What's the harm? You know, you're at home, you're on a monitor. What's the harm? And this goes back to the right that's affected, is you're one step away from being detained if you're sent home on an alternative and you violate that alternative. And we're seeing orders that are coming out in detentions that say, if you violate the alternative to detention, probation is to send the youth to staff secure detention, circumventing this entire detention procedure.
Isn't that circumvention, as you would describe it, within the control of the juvenile?
Not necessarily. And let me explain why. Because we know from adolescent development,
But they can't control what they do. Isn't that where you're headed with this?
Well, I think there's three things there. I think electronic monitoring doesn't accelerate adolescent development, but it confirms what we know. And what we know is juveniles don't always make the best decisions that are in their best interest. It's peer-driven. They can be impulsive. They have a reward bias, so they don't have the same cost-benefit analysis.
So we just let them run free on the streets. That's the solution.
No. I think detention, and I think alternative to detentions have a place, but I think the detention statutes that we have at 260.01 and 251.01 subsection 5B delineates when detention is appropriate and when it's not. The other thing I would also point out is subsection 7 of section 43246. That section is a section on how to construe the code. And one of the sections in their subsection 7 says, to provide a judicial procedure through which these purposes and goals are accomplished and enforced, in which the parties are assured a fair hearing and their constitutional and other legal rights are recognized and enforced. If you're going to restrict freedoms, then I think it has to be justified, and we have those statutes. It's not enough just to recognize those rights. We have to enforce them, too, because those detention statutes aren't just for the protection of the public. They're also for the protection of the youth to prevent them from being unlawfully detained.
For purposes of today, if we were to assume that this was a substantial right, being placed on electronic monitoring, is it substantially affected by the court's order?
Yes.
And how so?
Because again, you're one step away from detention, and that detention can occur if you violate the ATD, the alternative to detention, which could involve having peers over. It could involve not charging your battery. It could involve unauthorized movement outside the house. It doesn't take a whole lot to violate an alternative to detention, and those violations may not impact.
It's the threat that some other process may not be invoked. Is that the problem?
I don't follow you.
So your concern is assuming that CARE has certain features that everybody seems to know, and those are violated, that violation could lead to a detention, but the detention would not go through some process that was greater. It would go through a lesser process to the physical detention. It's the threat of the physical detention to which you speak. Is that correct?
It's the potential for that.
Okay. So is this ripe? Is this case ripe, even assuming that the features of the CARE program were known?
I think it's ripe. Right now, in the area of detention, we're getting statewide. It's just inconsistent. There's just not an agreement on how to interpret the intersection of 251.01 subsection 5, subsection B.
I know you only have a few seconds left, but as I read your brief, I understand you to be saying alternatives to detention are in fact detention. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying it's a form of detention, because detention...
Isn't the statute, doesn't it pretty clearly talk about home or an alternative to detention in one subsection and detention in another subsection?
May I finish?
You may.
Okay. You're talking about subsection 43260.01, subsection 2.
Yes.
And it says, if detention is required, then detain. And that's not discretionary. And then the other section says, release without restriction or use an alternative to detention. The issue that I'm trying to bring before the court today is does the Ray control for all detentions, regardless whether the safety of the community is physically threatened, or is detention and the use of an alternative to detention limited after you review section 251.01 subsection 5? I think that's the prism through which you have to determine whether you should be detained in a facility or an alternative should be used, or whether you release without restriction.
Before you sit down, if we were to agree with your position that you're putting forward today, what impact would it have on your client in this matter?
You would make him very happy.
Is he currently on the pre-adjudication CARE detention?
No, he is not. But one of his goals in deciding to appeal is more global justice. And that is, he doesn't want to see another youth. He agrees with my interpretation. Not everybody does, obviously. He doesn't want to see another youth in his position who committed a property offense, who didn't constitute physical safety threat, serious physical safety threat to the community, detained, or an alternative used.
So you're forwarding this as an issue that evades review? You're forwarding this as essentially an issue that would evade review.
If your finding is it's not a final order, it will evade review, and then the juvenile judges are free to do as they see fit, which may or may not comply with these statutes.
But interpreting your answer you gave me, it would basically have no impact on your client in this situation.
No, he would be happy, and he would.
How about his physical status, as opposed to his emotional status?
Oh, his physical status would not be impacted.
Okay.
Counsel, is there any reason that the legal issue that you raised couldn't be raised on an appeal from an order of adjudication or an order of disposition in a juvenile delinquency case.
Well, time frames. The thing about juvenile court is it's very fluid, and things happen pretty quickly, sometimes, and sometimes very slowly. But it is a fast-paced docket.
By design.
By design.
Is there anything preventing you from, or anyone, from raising the legal challenge that you are trying to raise here in this interlocutory appeal? Anything that would prevent you from raising it something that we've identified as a final appealable order?
Yes. I hadn't thought of that, but I will tell you one of the difficulties in doing that is time. By the time sometimes you get a plea of admission or you go to trial and lose, you have there's a predisposition investigation process, then you come to court for disposition. Sometimes, not very often, you might have a youth who's already completed the alternative to detention by the time you come to disposition, and then I wouldn't be able to appeal that at that particular point.
Are you talking about it would be moot? Couldn't you ask to have the issue addressed through one of the exceptions to the mootness doctrine? If it's just an issue of justiciability?
Yes. And I believe we did that in this case as well. We addressed the mootness issue.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I do appreciate your time and patience.
Mr. Erickson, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Andrew Erickson, Deputy County Attorney for Sarpy County, on behalf of the state. May it please the court, counsel. Your Honors, in hearing the questions before opposing counsel today, the state would just point out that the record is silent on what the CARE program is or what restrictions that it imposes upon juveniles as a detention to alternative to detention. Assuming that this court uses its own common sense in determining whether a substantial right was affected, the state would just point to its precedent in interest of Zachary B., which is 299 Nebraska 187, as noted in the state's brief. This court found that the placement of the juvenile out of the home was not while it did involve the substantial right to remain in the child's home, it did not permanently affect it so much as to violate that substantial right, and that is the contention of the state today, is that alternatives to detention do not permanently affect the substantial right of liberty, so as to render their use.
Is that the line that you advocate between final and non-final orders, permanent versus temporary? Couldn't a temporary order be of such duration and intensity that it would substantially affect a substantial right?
It could, Your Honor. I believe that would be fact-dependent, but we don't have those facts here. As we've heard earlier, these cases go very quickly, and in fact, I don't even believe Mr. Schaefer is on probation or under any terms and conditions at this time. If my memory serves me right, I believe the case is only open pending this appeal. So he's already completed a majority of his terms and conditions of probation, so...
Well, that's the good news.
That is the good news. But under this,
but Your Honor... But that's also not in the record.
No, it is not. So the only other issue, Your Honor, is as you've pointed out, and as it seems to be the purpose of the juvenile, is under 43-251-01, subsection 5B1, whether or not an alternative to detention is in fact detention. And whether or not the juvenile courts have to find that the juvenile is that the physical safety of the community would be seriously affected if the juvenile were not detained. That is the other issue in this case. that the juvenile seems to raise. So the question there is whether or not the juvenile courts, again, have to meet that higher standard. And as is noted in the state's brief, the logic does not follow that to place a juvenile on an alternative to detention requires that we make the same finding as if we were going to detain the juvenile. And that is the state's position.
What has to be shown to rise the level of an alternative to detention?
Under the process, the juvenile is taken into temporary custody. Per statute, probation does an initial intake. They utilize a risk assessment inventory that shoots out a score based on several different factors, which again are not in the record. Those could be what the level of offense is, what the juvenile's criminal history is, what their home life is like, whether or not they're utilizing drugs or alcohol. All those get factored into a scoring sheet, and then that determines whether or not there's consideration as to whether or not the juvenile can go home. Comparatively, this would be the juvenile equivalent of being placed on pretrial services, whether or not it's applicable, whether or not to apply a bond for
adults. Is that a decision that just evades appellate review?
The use of alternatives to detention, Your Honor?
Yeah, the screening, the rating, the ultimate determination of sending them back home or alternative to detention.
If we're talking about mootness, then yes, given that all appeals from juvenile court come to the appellate courts, not to the county court or district court, yes, that process, I would say it would evade a review because of the length of time. Obviously, as stated, this case has been going on a long time. We're now just before you, and this issue is being presented.
So maybe this isn't fair to pose to you as a distinguished from opposing counsel, but if there's an issue, well, structural issue, or a challenge to the way the statute or the regs are set up, and the issue may be that a juvenile who's not successful in the CARES program, whatever its features, right, goes into a physical detention, allegedly without the process that is usually associated with a loss of physical liberty. That would be the fear here, right, as I understand it. So how could that challenge be brought to an appellate court?
Before you answer that, doesn't the juvenile at any time have the right to go back to juvenile court and ask for a review of wherever they are?
Yes, Your Honor. At any time, the juvenile can file a motion to have their detention reviewed. Not to jump the gun, but you're going to hear another case today that involves just that.
Would habeas corpus potentially lie?
It's what we rely on in the adult criminal context. We don't hear appeals from detention orders or orders denying a reduction of bail. Those things, if someone thinks they're being unlawfully detained, the great writ.
Right. The writ of habeas corpus would apply if they were unlawfully detained, I would argue, if that's where we're going. But again, we're talking about alternatives to detention. You don't have in the record what those are, but we can assume the juvenile goes home, the juvenile is either put on an electronic monitor, again, in not trying to press the common sense issue, but the juvenile is not detained. They are not in a locked or staff secure facility. There's no significant restriction on their liberties. They do have electronic monitoring. Some of them are placed in the home and subject to house arrest if those conditions are necessary to...
Well, house arrest kind of sounds like detention.
It could be.
You couldn't leave your house.
Well, then that gets into the analysis of whether or not remaining in your home and allowing to do as you please within your home is the same as being in a detention facility where you're dictated what you can and can't do, Your Honor.
So. That sort of leads logically to the question that I posed to your opponent regarding alternatives to detention, what their legal status is under the statutory scheme, where he argues they are a form of detention. So as I envision the Venn diagram, when a circle of detention, as I understand his argument, and he may disagree, that's fair, alternatives to detention would be a circle wholly within the detention. Is that your perception of this, or is the circle completely separate for alternatives to detention, or in the classic Venn diagram, is there some intersection where some alternatives to detention may be a form of detention, but others are not? How do we interpret the statutes in that question?
When presented with that question, Your Honor, just based on the questions today, I would say it's a Venn diagram that overlaps in some portions. Again, house arrest, the question is whether or not that rises to the level of a physical detention. But statutorily, and as it reads in the definitions within the juvenile statutes, alternatives to detention are not detention. They are utilized for additional supervision, but not so infringing on the juvenile's liberty to consider the fact that the juvenile courts need to make a specific finding that the juveniles present a serious physical safety threat to the community.
So you're advocating for two separate circles?
Yes, Your Honor. With that, I thank the court for its time.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
We don't have any time for rebuttal in In Re Interest of Daniel S., but our next case is In Re Interest of Sarah P., Mr. Marks.